Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Yeah! We are live from 1314 Catson Street, Jerry Flannery's Bar in Limerick City!
And we're finally there. Finally, after years and years of preparation, years and years of anticipation, we've been building up to this game this weekend. We beat them last time, and I think we're going to beat them again. It's Japan, South Africa!
Come on, Japan!
Come on, Japan! A few big Japanese supporters in the house tonight.
Okay, we're messy. Obviously, we are, from the start, Baz and Andrew have been backing Ireland to win the World Cup because we believe...
I believe.
We believe that Ireland can win the World Cup. Are you with me? Are you with me? There's a few of you out there that might not believe enough. I don't know if you believe. Do you believe? Do you believe?
I do.
Do you believe?
I'm not convinced.
My dad's here somewhere. He definitely doesn't believe. He doesn't believe at all.
He's about to boo his son.
But we believe.
I don't believe. Sorry, Baz.
You don't believe?
I don't believe.
Why not?
I don't believe because we got hammered by England in the summer. We got hammered by Japan. And we're about to play New Zealand, the double world champions.
Yeah.
It's not believe. We're not buying into believe. We're buying into naive.
Naive. I can buy that.
To naivety.
To naivety. Come on, Ireland. All right. Yeah. We are live from 1314 Catherine Street, Limerick. What a swanky bar.
Isn't it? It's lovely, isn't it?
You like it?
Big Christmas balls at the back there.
Yeah.
Christmas tree balls.
A bit early, but...
Yeah. All season. Mm. All year round. This is Limerick, huh?
Mm.
Limerick's grown on me quite a bit, you know.
Ooh.
When I arrived earlier on, I arrived into the train station and I got homesick straight away. And I find myself walking out and I felt like I was kind of making the face that Peter Mahoney makes on game day. You know, like just that unpleasant, fatigued face.
That part of town isn't great, to be honest, is it? Cool.
Yeah.
But they're working on it.
And I rolled my sleeves down because I didn't want to touch anything. But then Barry picked me up and it all changed. Like, my world changed, and Barry gave me a tour of the city and I saw all the sights. What did I see
did
today?
I brought him down to O'Connell Street. I showed him the sushi place. And then I brought him here, but I Limerick City, we've some of the most respected and best rugby players in the world. Conor Murray, Keith Earls, Paul O'Connell. Recently being a little bit disrespected when someone slapped a purple dildo on his head at Electric Picnic. So I said to Trimby, when we were down on O'Connell Street, I was like, rather than us seeing that as a negative thing, I think we should embrace that. And we should embrace the dildo. And we should set up our own dildo games every year, where people come from all over the world and we set up on O'Connell Street and people will toss dildos up O'Connell Street as far as the eye can see, and we'll make a whole weekend about it.
There could be festivities. Like, yeah. It could be a full day out for the family. There could be like face painting over here and like, you know, like pony riding over here and like the dildo. Like, obviously the kids don't look at the whole dildo thing.
You know,
don't worry about
be
that.
Like sharpening their dildos, like getting them aerodynamic.
Yeah.
And then throwing them so far. Imagine it.
There could be like dildo geeks and like dildo anoraks, and they could be comparing like dildo throwing stats from last year's festival.
Imagine all Orange Shannon Airport arriving with their gear bags, all the dildos just sticking out of them, like all different colors and stuff.
I've never said dildo so many times.
I know. It's great. My mother is having a nervous breakdown over here. I also told my mother that you were staying in her house tonight, and she was so heartbroken when I told her that it wasn't happening.
Oh,
yeah.
Maybe another time.
Yeah.
What did she say?
She said she has a dildo at home.
How far can you throw it, though? Right, anyway, that is more than enough. We are here in 1314 Bar, Jerry Flannery's very own bar, where the beer flows like Buckfast and the staff are all on minimum wage.
Speaking of Jerry Flannery, speaking of the devil, will we get him out here? Yeah. Introducing Munster, an Irish rugby legend, a top-class publican, and a man so completely unable to hack the pressure of coaching his own province. That he ended up abandoning them, and now he just hangs out with us every day and regrets that decision every day for the rest of his life. Mr. Jerry Flannery, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I didn't approve.
It's true, though.
Spineless. Can I call you Spineless Flannery?
Yeah.
Listen, you're with us now, right? So you're one of us, but I mean, up until, you know, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, things were going great. First of all, where did it all go wrong? And when you made the decision to turn down the contract, did you know that was the beginning of the end? And finally, what proactive steps have you taken to make sure that your life stops unraveling? Take your time.
Obviously, it started with approaching the CEO and say I wasn't going to take the contract. I didn't know it was going to be like this. I didn't know it was going to be so shit. But I've obviously regret the decision. I don't mean to speak bad on you lads, but it's not been great.
It just did.
But I've been proactive. I've applied for jobs. I'm out there. I'm in the market. I've applied for Munster as a kit man. My CV's gone in there. I'm hoping.
No, it's a bit too high. It's too ambitious.
A bit too high. Keep going. Lower. I know the bar staff in like the Shannon RFC clubhouse. You can maybe get you in there on Sundays collecting glasses. Get you some.
Yeah, I had my eye on the janitor's job in Thomond Park. I thought, like, I'm not really sure where this came from, but I was like thinking if I could do a good job on, you know, initially just keeping the toilets clean, keeping the stadium spick and span, and then if I could just start putting some of my ideas, rugby ideas, up on the mirrors, just writing them up, that maybe Stephen Larkham might walk into the toilet, someone go, he's after writing this up here.
And, so, Fly, you said you weren't sure where this came from. That came from Good Will Hunting. And
you are Matt Damon.
See, that's where you're wrong. Will Hunting is far smarter than you.
Well, look, that's my plan, and
we'll call that Plan B. You're with us now.
Yeah.
This is Plan A.
Yeah, I've got to make the best of a shit situation.
Yeah, well, it's not great for us either, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be honest with you. Well, look, we've wasted enough of your time. It's about time we got our first two guests on the couch, if that's all right. First up, Munster and Ireland legend, who in 2014 was part of the first ever Ireland team to defeat New Zealand. It's Niamh Good Cop Briggs. Bad boys, bad boys. Oh, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. Oh, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? You're too bad. You're too rude. You're too bad. You're too rude. Yeah. Bad boys, bad boys.
And next up, someone you'll all be very familiar with, Munster and Ireland star, the youngest Munster player ever to reach 100 Munster caps, instrumental when Munster beat the Māori All Blacks in 2016. And he's going to help us tonight understand how we're going to beat the All Blacks at the weekend. The impossible task. Mr. Rory Scannell.
Sit down.
Liam and Rory.
Nice chair.
We are, sir, yeah, Flaz over in the little kind of the granny.
I'm the sick relative. You need to put a little tartan blanket and just ignore me in the corner.
If anyone has a little blanket, that would be great. Liam, Rory, we're delighted you can join us tonight. We know you're both very busy at the moment, so thanks a million for taking the time to join us all here. Briggsy, I'm going to start with you. Obviously, an incredible career to date. You've achieved more than most on the pitch for your country, for your province, for your club. You've also had your fair share of injuries, and obviously with the boot on you tonight, you're still stuck in the middle of one.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through where exactly you are at the moment?
Yeah, about 8 weeks ago, I smashed my leg pretty much and dislocated my ankle, so I had it pinned in that. So I'm about 8 weeks post-surgery now, hoping to get the boot off maybe in the next week. And then we'll see what happens after that, but wow, it's been a lot of injuries.
Yeah, so
yeah.
That's...
I stuck them out in fairness.
Take us through the last 2 or 3 years of injuries for you you've had.
Yeah, I suppose it started, like, hamstring off the bone was probably the start of the big, you know, the ball rolling. And then I got back for about a week. It seems to always get about, I used to get about a week of training. And then torn Achilles, missed the World Cup. And yeah, just trying to be fighting everything since. So, and then this is just good old icing on the cake.
What about you, Rory? Where are you at the minute? You've obviously had a good start to the season, 2 from 3 wins. Season started well. If you go on now to have a little bit of success with Munster, will you look back and say it all started the day we got rid of Flannery? Spineless Flannery, sorry. I'll give him his full title.
No, I wouldn't quite say that. I won't be too harsh. But yeah, it's been a good start to the season so far.
You won't be too harsh because you shouldn't be too harsh. There's no basis for it.
Fair. So yeah, 2 wins and we lost to the Cheetahs last week, which is disappointing. But we have a week off now and, you know, into a tough 14-week block, I think, next week. So
how good are the Cheetahs?
Yeah, they're looking impressive. 3 bonus point wins so far and, you know, won the Currie Cup as well. So they've had a great start to the season and I think we'll definitely see them in the later parts of the season as well. This year they're flying it, so.
Briggsy, I don't know, obviously not many people here will know, but when you see Briggsy behind closed doors, she's incredibly dedicated on the pitch, off the pitch, in the gym, recovery, rehab. You're one of the most dedicated players I've ever seen. And also juggling that with a full-time job as an upstanding member of the Garda Síochána. How do you balance both of those things?
Sorry. I just want to say we didn't splash out the £400 for the license tonight, but Briggsy said we're covered to us to have to. And look, not to be outdone by Ryan Tubery in the Late Late Show, Briggsy has promised that if you form an orderly queue, we'll sort out penalty points for the end of the night. But hey, don't take the piss. It's a maximum of 2 penalty points per person. And we might just edit this bit out at the end. Just there's a few rats out there.
Just one sitting over there.
Can you pull any strings in Northern Ireland at all? No.
No, sorry.
He arrives down to Dublin every week for the show and he just abandons his car wherever the fuck he wants. And he's just like, I'm from the north, I can do whatever I want.
Do your worst, I'm not from around here.
Is that real? Is that a myth or like?
No, they can come for you, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, they haven't. Have you been pulling strings?
I know, but what's the red of your car?
Sure, Reg. I can't remember. Genuinely can't remember.
Trimby 22.
23, man. 23.
I was going to say 23.
We were different eras.
I was 22. No, on a serious note, how do you, like, do they give you so much time off or are they very generous with that kind of stuff or is it just a matter of getting into work? There's my dad, yeah.
Hey, Mike.
Mom, be careful. She is mad about your husband.
Mike Murphy's a legend.
Yeah. She's the only woman in the world other than you that has her eyes on him, so be careful.
Yeah, look, it's... No, guards have been great in terms of their support and stuff, but it's like anybody else that plays at a high level sport. It's amateur. You train before work, you train after work type of thing. So your day starts incredibly early, you know, finishes in the evening, and you just don't get to do anything that's kind of normal. You know, you don't see much TV, you don't socialize too often, but it's worth it. Like, it's kind of like, you know, you love it, so you don't mind doing it.
Yeah.
But if I'd love if they gave me loads of time off, but they've been 10 years playing for Ireland. They've been incredibly supportive, so very lucky.
Okay, so looking forward to the weekend, Ireland versus New Zealand. You're a member of the team, the first Irish team to have ever beaten a New Zealand team. Can you take us back to what exactly you used, I suppose, to overcome the mighty challenge of beating a New Zealand rugby team?
Hands up on the stage. Hands up if you've beaten New Zealand. We should.
I know we probably there's definitely one more fella in the house. Is there anyone out there that's beat New Zealand? I'm expecting Ginger McLaughlin to be like up in the rafters, you know, like Phantom of the Opera, just like
We should start a WhatsApp group, us three and Ginger, just keep in touch and share memories. The new Jerry and Baz group.
At least I almost beat them. We almost beat them. We raised the hearts and souls of the nation and then dashed them just as quickly. Did you ever come close?
Nah. We got pumped every time.
that time you almost beat them, I was supporting the All Blacks.
Were you?
Yeah.
You bitter fuck.
Yeah, sorry. It's what we do.
Yeah.
It comes from jealousy. So I think it's fine.
But talk us through, what's the key? What's the secret?
I don't know. For us, it was just that we were complete and utter underdog. Like, no one gave us a chance at all. So, like, you're secretly going, hee-hee, you know, as a group, and being like, let's just throw caution to the wind. Nothing to lose. And in the Women's World Cup, it's similar to the 20s, that if you lose a game, you're out, basically. So, like, we just didn't, like, we didn't give a fuck about them, to be honest.
Mm. You know, is that the key, to not put them on a pedestal?
Yeah, I think for us, we just had, you know, great team culture, really good spirit within the squad, and we just looked after ourselves in terms of how we prepared for the game, as opposed to worry. You always have to worry about the opposition, but not really delve too much into how brilliant they are. And they're like, the women's team are as awesome as the men's. They've won loads of World Cups and stuff. So we just kind of looked after ourselves and not really. But we embraced it. We loved the challenge. We wanted, like, for the haka and stuff, it's very different to the men's one. It's all, you know, it's like more of a dance as opposed to anything about slitting throats, because they're not really. And we spoke about it beforehand. We just really wanted to enjoy it, because for us, it was, you know, we've only played them once in our, that was the first time we got to play them. We've only played them once since. It's not something that we get to do every year. So, we just kind of went out with the, let's just go and enjoy it, trust in our ability to play rugby, and hopefully we pulled off a shocker.
Yeah, well, he did. Scans, beating the Maoris. Obviously, it was around the time that Axel passed away, and this week being Axel's anniversary, it's quite a poignant kind of time as well, the fact that we're playing the All Blacks the weekend. What was that like for you? Was that that must have been a huge moment in Thomond Park in front of that crowd, and that moment when they presented the jersey, and to go out and beat, you know, some of the best players in the world, future All Blacks as well as current All Blacks.
Yeah, it was a special night. It was obviously just after Axel passed away, and, you know, we'd had a tough few weeks in Europe. It's kind of a strange one. I remember chatting to Razzie, and he was thinking, he was in between a league game, so we had a weekend off, and he was thinking about now quite a young side. He didn't kind of realise the tradition Munster had against touring sides, so I remember kind of looking at him saying, oh, it's a bit strange that you're going to do that. And obviously, Flav will remember it, but, you know, we ended up putting out kind of the strongest side we had during the November series. And, you know, a couple of young lads played as well. It was a special night, and, you know, obviously, the weather probably helped us a bit. They weren't used to that torrential rain, I'd say, but now it's a special night, and, you know, it's not something you do every week or every year. So, you know, it was quite enjoyable, and it was a great win for the club.
Flav, what's your memories of that game?
I probably look at it like it's a bit different for me because myself and Felix at the time would have been chatting to Rassi and to Jacques Nienaber at the time, and like Rory alluded to, they probably didn't realise the tradition that's attached to Munster playing touring sides, and they just said, oh, we're playing the New Zealand Maoris, we'll just put out like a Mickey Mouse side and rest most of our top players. And we said, I don't think you're really grasping what this means to Munster as a club or to the Munster supporters. And Rassi said, well, look, let me talk to the players, spoke to Rory, spoke to a lot of lads who've been kind of probably on the fringes of the national camp. And he came back to myself and Jonesy and just said, look, he said, I think I'm getting to grips with what this game means to you. And there were some lads there who probably, you know, were probably fourth choice in the squad, but because of international players away being away, they got into the squad that day. And that's what I would have been cliche. The really cool thing about games like that is that, listen, you can fast forward through 10 years of your career, and you can, if you perform on this day, you'll go into the history books for Munster every single time. And you know, the lads were unbelievable on the day. And you know, for guys like I look at guys like John Madigan, who started for us in second row and probably didn't play maybe more than 15 caps for Munster senior team, but he'll always go down now as a guy who beat the Maori All Blacks. And it was you know, off the back of what happened with Axel, it was a really weird time for us as a club. But I think players' performance is really the currency that you trade on, and you know, they delivered again, so it was a great day.
I always slag Trimby because I feel like, of all the people in the world, in Ireland, to have beaten the All Blacks, he could not give less of a fuck, really.
I just like slagging you. And apart from that, I'm not that bothered.
Yeah. He's just like, meh. And everyone else is losing their mind over it.
Well, Pat is.
Pat especially, yeah. Pat wrote a play about it. That's how much Pat loves it. And Trimby, like, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it is. We all grow up as Irish people, big rugby fans. Remember my dad sitting me down watching the Haka every morning that it was on. It was a big moment. You get up to watch it, and it was always that mountain that was always too steep to climb. I mean, what was that like for you? That I don't know, the final whistle. I want to know what that moment was like.
Yeah.
Was it as special as we all hoped?
It was. And I say that in jest. Obviously, the All Blacks were the team that you never think you're going to beat. And there's an element of, obviously, Ireland will go on in the future and they're bound to beat them a few more times. And obviously, they've beaten them again since. And there's something special that was the first time. And they'll never beat them for the first time ever again. And it was the whole occasion. There was something about that week with the Cubs. I'm sure a lot of this is covered in Pat's play. He gave me the script, but I didn't get around to reading it. I just text back, like, emoji thumbs up. But the whole run-up to the game, you know, the Cubs won the World Series, and we all became massive Cubs fans. In the same way, we've all become Japanese rugby fans in the last few weeks, but we all jumped on the bandwagon, and then all the Irish came into town, and it's the occasion was incredible, and the people that you share those occasions with make it more incredible. So it was just a moment in time that I'll always remember.
Yeah.
So I'm playing it down, but it was very, very special.
Even when we played in Thomond Park against the All Blacks on a Tuesday night, you know, didn't think there'd be a huge amount of crack afterwards, but we dragged the absolute arse out of it. I remember being up in Charlie Malone's bar. Is it Charlie Malone's up by Bobby Burns's? The black hole. The black hole, they call it, right? And we were in the black hole. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and there was just bodies on the ground. Everyone was just setting up camp, going to sleep. And I was there, I am not going to bed. So I was with Anthony Redden, who owns Anthony O'Dwyer, who loves, and Redden's down our Redden's bar on the corner, and I was like, "Your man in the black hole was like, lads, I'm shutting you off."
Lads, you got knocked out in the game. You shouldn't have been drinking, man. You were knocked unconscious after about 3 minutes.
Back before concussion was cool. I was knocked out in the first minute of that game. If you watch back, I got KO'd. And I was lying in the ground. I tried to get up, and I just run backwards and fall. The doctor came on, and it was like, he told me afterwards, he was like, Barry, I asked you to come off, and you were like, please don't take me off. My dad will kill me if you take me off. So he left me on. And I remember like about 30 minutes, he was standing beside me on the wing, and he kept talking to me. And I was like, what's wrong with you, man? And he was like, your head. And I'd completely forgotten like that I'd been knocked out. But yeah, you're probably right. I shouldn't have been drinking this.
And you have a shit dad.
But I remember, was your mum worried sick? Were you worried about him?
The hangover, she's always good for a hangover and just coming over and rubbing my head and stuff like that. But I remember going to Aunt, we walked outside the black hole at like 6 a.m. and Aunt was like, do you want to go for a pint? I was like, yeah. And he brought me down and opened up his bar. And we went in and he goes, will I put on the match? And I was like, yes. So he put on the match and we sat there at 2 points of Guinness and we watched it. And anytime I do anything in the game, he'd go, well done, Bar. Well done. And then it finished at like 8 a.m. and he goes, will I put it on again? So we got to about 10:30 and people started coming in for coffees, and like his wife came in with their newborn child, and I was there holding this little baby with my pint of Guinness, still trying to watch the match, like trying to feed it. So I dragged the arse out of it. Did you drag the arse out of beating the All Blacks or beating New Zealand?
I have. I've talked about it a lot. To be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Well, I don't know.
I remember
that was my first week as a guard, that match that you played. And they were like, is anyone around to do, like, can help out with the match? So I was like, yes, free tickets. So I was like, yes, I am traffic duty on the Dock Road. I saw none of the game. None.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like, everyone talked about this great match, moments of ever. And I was like, yeah, it was brilliant.
Just do that.
Come on, stop. I said stop, come on.
You going from traffic duty on the Dock Road to then beating the All Blacks
is like his life in reverse.
Unfortunately, that's true.
That's true.
It'll pick up again.
Scans, obviously, there's no one here that has been closer to the Irish camp. This year, you were in the camp for the whole summer. Obviously, playing in a position that is probably the most competitive position we have in the squad, and you were very unlucky to lose out. But it was obviously a very disappointing few weeks for you when you had to depart from the squad.
Yeah, you know, I was delighted to be involved in the squad when I was named at the end of the season. And as you said, you know, centre is probably one of the most competitive. And I knew myself going in, you know, the lads have played a lot more than I had at that level and, you know, more experience. So I knew I was coming up against it. But it's kind of, the World Cup's a strange one because it's such a small squad that the more positions you can cover, you know, if you're a fringe player, the more likely you are to go. And just as the other centres all cover the two positions, I primarily play at 12, and, you know, the odd bit of 10 probably, you know, didn't help me. But yeah, it was, you know, great to be involved. It was probably the best pre-season I've put down so far in my career. And, you know, it was obviously disappointing to be let go, but, you know, going back straight into pre-season with Munster then, you know, I felt good, felt fit.
Did you find out early, Scans, in pre-season? You know, he kind of staggered it.
Yeah, so it was, I think it was, everyone was in kind of for like 6 or 7 weeks, and it was actually the week before the first game. The end of that week, I was let go. So it was at this point not to get a crack, you know, obviously.
Was that maybe easier rather than getting right up to...
Yeah, like, you know, chatting to Mike Haley, who, you know, came over last year and was in the mix, and, you know, he was kept on, played against Italy, came off the bench for, I don't know, 20 minutes. And, you know, it's obviously great getting your first cap, huge honour. And, you know, the next morning he gets a phone call saying, look, we're going to release you back. So it's mixed emotions. And, you know, that probably would have been harder to take than being told, you know, the week before, look, we're releasing you back. So, you know, it's probably a bit tougher in that circumstance. But yeah, it was disappointing overall, but, you know, it's something you have to take on a chin.
Tell me, in around, whenever you were watching the Japan game, honestly, were you kind of supporting Japan a little bit?
I'll put it to this way, I'm 2 from 2 against Japan, so I'm happy enough with that one.
So I just imagine, like, anyone who didn't make the cut is like, or let's say you, like, just flaking down William Street on a rickshaw or something like this. With a samurai sword, throwing out fucking sushi, just like, come on, Japan! But obviously your brother's involved, so...
Yeah, he was involved, so yeah. It was, I know, it was disappointing for them, but they're in the quarterfinal, which is the main thing, so...
Yeah, you heard from him, how's he getting on?
Yeah, good. He's delighted to be involved this week now. It's an exciting time, so he's... It's hard keeping in touch with the time difference, so I've haven't been chatting to him too much. But you know, it's tough going. I can imagine. You know, you're in camp since the middle of June, and you know, it's they could potentially be there another 3 weeks, all going well. So,
is there a competitive thing at all between the two of you? Like, is there a part of you is kind of sick of him having so much success?
Not really. No, we're different positions.
I imagine like you're obviously extremely successful. You're Munster player, Ireland player. But are you like Venus Williams and he's Serena?
Could look
like
that
any,
way.
Any other family would be like, this is my daughter, Venus. She's really successful. But then now, you know, in your family, they're like, go away, Venus, would you? Serena, come and meet our friends.
Well, my parents provisionally booked going back in, I'd say, January or February, you know, and at the time they're like, oh, hopefully one of you will be going, but... you know, when it actually came to it, we were like, yeah, well, we kind of partly guessed that Niall would be going, so it's like, oh, thanks for backing me anyway, but I know we wouldn't be too competitive, really.
Oh, he's being modest, man. To be fair, he's competing with Chris Farrell, with Bundy Aki, with fucking Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose. Niall Scanlon's competing with, like, Rory Bestmore's like 57 years of age. So fuck it. The fact that Niall's not making the team, man, is like. So you got to give him some props, man. Well, he's a great player.
Rory, talk to us about Fla as a coach. What was your relationship like?
This is a bit dirty.
How how was it really?
Yeah, good. As a forwards coach, I didn't have too much involvement with him, but usually, you know, when you meet him in the morning, he kind of you say hello, Fla, how are you? Good, yeah, man. What did you have for breakfast? So he loves chatting about food. So the majority of my conversations were about food with Fla, and obviously he's massively into his healthy eating and, you know, probably a bit over the top. And I was only chatting to James Cronin this morning, and he reminded me of a story on the way back from a game where I sitting next to Fla on the plane and...
Hang on, you're not on the show to make me look like a dickhead.
I'm not making you look like a dickhead.
Okay.
He's sick.
So, obviously, he's a very vain man, as you can see, and we'd won a big European Cup game and, you know, bought a bar of chocolate after the game in the airport, and I can't remember who's sitting next to me, but, you know, opened it, offered the lads some, and, you know, I just thought in my head, Fla obviously won't eat this, like, he doesn't eat chocolate. And he taps me on the shoulder. You gonna offer me some of that, man? And I said, oh, sorry, I didn't think you'd eat chocolate. Oh,
he's like a dog. Like.
Yeah, I'm real sweet too, but I love chocolate. So he's like, oh, do you want some?
Why do I sound like some scob outside the cold station?
You say man at the end of every sentence.
He does.
So I said, oh, sorry, do you want some? And he goes, nah. And just turned around back into the laptop coding scrums or whatever in malls. So yeah, the majority of my conversations with Fla were about food, but...
Were weird.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah,
yeah.
Weird, but made him the player he is today. Thanks.
Well, let's flip it on its head. So, Jerry, what was it like coaching a guy like Scans?
Well, when I reflect back on my life now, and I reflect back when I worked with Rory, things are obviously an awful lot different. What I loved about working with Munster is that there's so many players there who are so hard working, and you take it for granted when you're a player in Munster and then you go graduate to being a coach. But when you speak to people with experience in different clubs, I appreciate that the work ethic that the players have in Munster is you know, I'm not saying it's unique, but it's a big strength that we have here. And I absolutely loved working with Rory. He's everything that he's so coachable. He's got a massive work ethic. He's always trying to get better. The main thing for me is that, like, Rory is so focused on performance on the 80 minutes. Like, he's not concerned about
peripheral things like appearance or no, but like it is like in the modern day with social media, like he could be concerned with his haircut. He's obviously not, or his clothes. Rory is focused on performing in that 80 minutes, and I that's even the fact that like being deadly serious, the fact that he's reached 100 caps, the youngest player to reach 100 caps in Munster. People outside of Munster, probably outside of the Munster squad, probably aren't aware of the esteem that he's held, with how high he's held in esteem with his peers, and it's off the basis of him delivering in the 80 minutes. It's not because he's a good laugh or because he's because he's good crack or even being popular. It's none of that, you know what I mean? The players hold Rory in that esteem because of the way he plays. And
nothing else.
And look, I can't speak highly enough for the guy. He's a warrior.
John, it's good to see as well. Since he's left, he's found a barber and he's not still going to Peter Marks, which is great.
Ooh.
Finally.
That went down well. Well done. Again, like I said, shit banter. There you go.
Well, Briggsy, it's Ireland versus New Zealand this weekend. What are your thoughts on the chances? Are we naive or should we believe?
Oh my God, that was creepy.
It's all on you.
No, I actually think Ireland will win it. Yeah.
It's two people out there believe it.
It's okay. I could really look naive. No, I do. I think that they have a confidence in like having beaten them before. Okay, albeit twice, not 26 times that they've got hammered before that. But there's just something about New Zealand, I think, that Ireland seem to have gotten in, like they seem to have a needle in there in terms of like New Zealand. I don't necessarily think they'll fear them because they probably just don't fear anybody because they're kind of like an arrogant type of team. But I do think that they have the game plan. I think they'll frustrate them. It's all structured. It's not pretty to watch at times in terms of percentage point play, but I do think that will suit Ireland more than it will suit New Zealand. And if they can stop the unstructured play, I think that they can. Yeah, I just think we can.
Believe.
Naive.
Naive.
Okay, you're going for an Ireland win. Scans, obviously you were in the camp. There's a lot of people talking about Joe having something up his sleeve. Do you feel like we're going to go out and expect the same pattern of play from Ireland, or do you feel they've got something different?
They probably haven't had as good as performances the last couple of weeks since the Scotland game, but you know, when they played New Zealand last, they starved them of possession and, you know, kind of played a controlled kicking game. So I think New Zealand struggled with that. It wasn't the prettiest game from an Irish perspective. I think 16-9 was the final score, but you know, they got the job done, and I think if they can do something similar this week, they'll have a good chance. But, you know, they're definitely up against it. But I think they're due a big performance, so I'm going to back them.
Belief. Final word for you, Trimby.
To naivety.
Lads, I'd like to give a very special thanks to Niamh and to Rory for coming to join us tonight. And we'll see you in the second half. Take a 15-minute break, lads. Get your pints and business in.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
How are you all doing upstairs? Hey, everyone upstairs! Hey! Up in the mezzanine. It's the first ever mezzanine in Limerick, I'd say. Fucking upstairs, man. How are we all at the back? Trimby keeps trying to learn the word. How to say goal. I just can't. I just can't do it.
We haven't got Giles in Belfast.
Every time I say it, I can see him across the table, but just mouthing it to himself. Like, goal.
I'm rehearsing.
You mean there's some goals.
Hey! Hey! Fine, that's right.
Politics and sport do not mix.
That's Limerick City. All right, are you ready for our next guest? This man, what a man, Jesus. This man is one of the best players to have ever pulled on the Leinster jersey. To have ever pulled on the Ireland jersey. And to have ever pulled on the Lions jersey. Put your hands together for Sean O'Brien!
Oh, Shawnee.
You should have heard the two of them backstage arguing over who had a shitter haircut.
You've got horns, Larry. You've got horns.
Two meatheads. And I was like, you've got the same fucking haircut.
You really do need to go back to Peter Mark, though.
What a shit bag.
Look at this. It's not blended in or anything. Typical Limerick, actually.
You're a long way from Tulla. You're a long way from Tulla.
I'm the typical Carlo one.
He's London now. He's got the London haircut. Did you room together? Did you spend a lot of time together?
Jesus, we did, actually. Do you remember that first rooming experience?
I remember on the Churchill Cup, when we went over after myself and Tomás O'Leary were tragically injured and couldn't go on the Lions tour. We were sent out with all the Muppets to over to Colorado, and Sean was one of the Muppets. And we were slowly, O'Connell had said to me, he goes, this O'Brien fella, man, I think he's one of us. He's not like one of them Leinster lads. And when we met him, I went, yeah, I think he's right. And we were trying to work on him, and I'd be texting Paul. He said, we're working on O'Brien. And then you made shit of your knee or something, did you?
Yeah, I told my medial over there, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the start of it, but...
So we were trying to
sign him for Munster all
Best.
The time.
I was actually running with Neil Best that day that I'd done my medial. And he had went out on the tear that night.
Drinking pints.
And I didn't know Neil Best from Adam.
Okay.
Drinking anything that went. And I was lying in the room. I was after having room service or something. And I was in a good bit of pain. He came in completely drunk. Tried to wrestle me. First and foremost. With no clothes on. He had no clothes on. I was like, this lad is a lunatic. Then he opened the window and proceeded to tell me he's going to fire me out the window. I was like 19, I think, at the time, thinking, I'm going to have to call someone here about this fella.
But the man beside you is a little bit of a lunatic as well, to be fair.
He was.
That must have been your criteria, was it? I want a roommate who's mental.
Yeah, when I walked into the room, actually the first day with him, he was sitting on a chair on his laptop, completely naked. True or false?
Shawnee,
you're responding to emails or something, but like
you're the common denominator though.
Yeah.
You're bringing it out in these fellas.
Well, I'm not sitting around the room with no clothes on me, that's for sure.
Yeah, Shawnee, I think whenever you've finished up, I didn't finish up, technically you're still going.
three-year contract.
Oh, nice. Yeah. On how much cash?
More than you were ever on, I'd say. the
thing that everybody said last year, went around all the Leinster fellas, and everything they said was, he's a great fella on the pitch, obviously, but he's a great fella off the pitch. You're a storyteller, you're a character. And then I went around, because we were prepping to interview you, texted a few of the lads, and two or three of them came back and they said, get Shawnee to tell the Lar Neil story. What's the Lar Neil story?
Lar Neil is his name, actually.
Nail.
N-A-I-L.
Is it like go?
Nail. It's O'Neill. It's O'Neill, but you call it Nail back home.
N-E-A-L.
He lives on the mountains.
Right.
But I was in my cousin's house one evening, and we were having a roast dinner. And Mary, who's my cousin's mother, said to me,
your aunt.
Yeah.
They're very, very distant, though.
I'm actually not sure how close they are, to be honest. We're all kind of related down there. So. She said to me, I had eaten my dinner before everyone else. The plate was wiped clean. And she landed a second one down onto the plate, like, and She said to me, "Jesus, you're some man to eat," she says. And I was like, I was training a lot of the time, and I was like, I've a good appetite. And she says, "But I know a better fella to eat than you." And she goes, and Mary would be very straight now in real country. She'd be like, "Learn it. A Ballinacraig was such a good man to eat. He used to bring a flask of tea and sandwiches to bed with him." So that was the Laran Ale story, and I told that to the boys one day, and just couldn't get over this. Like,
oh man!
It sounds like another one. When I actually moved to Dublin first as well, I had another one, another story. I think it was the second or third training camp I'd been to for the Irish under-21s, and there was a couple of lads brought in just for training to make up the numbers outside the 26. And one lad said to me, he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Carlow." And he said, "Where is that?" And I said, "It's down south," I said. And I didn't want to really entertain him at all, so I didn't want to tell him. He goes, "Oh, it was down there one day," he said, "and I seen the big white fluffy things." And I said, "Sheep?" And he said, no, he said, "There was more than one of them, shoops." So I kind of knew then what I was dealing with, like, straight away.
I was texting the two boys today saying, like, we should get him to talk about Carlo, and they just kept coming back and going on about fucking nonsense that I knew we couldn't talk to you about. But I kept going back to, "Can we talk about Carlo?" And he eventually goes, "Who is this Italian guy that you keep talking about?"
And then on the WhatsApp it was Carlo.
And then he goes in and said the same thing. "Yeah, who is this Italian guy? I was giving the guy from Belfast the benefit of the doubt," but then he came in and goes, "Yeah, who is this Italian guy?
Carlo."
Jesus.
Hey, you think the fucking snob's up in Leinster, man? He doesn't even know where Carlo is. You know, spell it.
So you're over in London now. You're the Carlo man over in London. How's that adjustment been?
I'm not there yet, actually. Okay. I'm moving over on the 25th of next month. So I've been over and back a few times. Which has actually been quite strange, to be honest. It's a little bit daunting and scary, and very out of my comfort zone from the few days I've spent here and there over there. But something I'm really looking forward to, challenge.
So you're rehabbing the hip from Dublin, is it?
Yeah, rehabbing the hip from in Leinster still. Which is also very strange, because you're in the morning, do your rehab, and out the gap then. You're not involved in any meetings or anything. Although I'm still contracted, obviously, to the union till the end of the World Cup.
Right.
Which hopefully isn't this weekend, so.
Mm. Yeah. Naive. Have you a target in mind for your first game?
I actually probably, it could be as far out as March, to be honest, because when I get over there, I kind of start into their pre-season block that I have to do, because I have to hit a lot of targets before I get back, and then obviously train on the field with them for probably 6 weeks before I see can I actually play again and get knocked about and so on. So I'm kind of thinking Paddy's Day might be a good one.
Yeah. So when you say Paddy's Day, a lot of us would have believed that maybe your Irish career had come to an end, but like, you're only 31. Are you only 31?
To naivety.
32.
You Sean again back in the Ireland.
Well, I think you're 32, so yeah. A lot of people probably presumed you were a bit older because you've been around and been a feature of the Irish team for so long. So, I mean, everyone in this room and in Ireland would love to see you back in the Irish jersey. Is that something for you that you'd love to see?
Yeah, it's something that I've... something definitely I thought about when I was signing for London Irish, and that's why I definitely didn't say it. I'm finishing from international rugby at any stage. So if I get back playing, and if things, circumstances change within the union or whatever, there's no official written rule there as of such, and I'd obviously love to play with Ireland again. And if I get back playing, that's Ireland and probably another Lions tour is what I'd have on the
that was a
periphery
question. And obviously missing out on this World Cup, a massive blow to you. I'm sure this has been something you'd have targeted for a long time. But your experiences in World Cups in the past, you played in 2011, was that your first World Cup?
11 and 15.
What was your experience in those?
Yeah, 2011 actually was a great, it was absolutely unbelievable World Cup. We had great crack. You were there, weren't you?
You were all there,
Yeah.
Flat was there for most of it.
I was there for a little while. Oh, yeah. I gave up the jerseys instead of crying. Remember, you won. You beat Australia.
I do, actually.
The highlight of your career.
I do remember
dickhead.
That. I didn't know what you were at the time, but hunting.
Go on.
I didn't catch that. What was it?
I didn't know who he was at the time. That was a great tour, in fairness, and a great World Cup. And obviously, we took Australia that time, and great experiences over there. But actually, after that one, the few days after that Wales loss was actually some of the best crack I've ever had in my life. And I remember the second night I had come down, and someone, I think Ralla, was wheeled down into the lobby, I think, and he had sunglasses on him, and we had him all taped up. And he couldn't move, and no one was allowed to touch him either. But we kept, obviously, we were out the whole night, and we went to the next morning, and I text Paulie, actually, and said to Paulie O'Connell, I said, "Where are you?" He says, "D4 bar." I says, "On the way." Grand, me and Ferg are here. So I walked into the D4 bar. This is after about 2 days now, solid drinking, and Paulie was sitting there with Ferg, and they had a massive bottle of champagne in the middle of this table. And they were like, two of them were just having, they were like best buds, having the crack and high-fiving each other. But when I walked in, I got the fright of my life. Paulie was like Casper the Ghost, completely white, and had shrunk. I think he'd lost about 2 stone in the 2 days. So we nicknamed him the Corpse for the rest of the day. But do you remember the D4 bar that day, that next day?
There was one across the road?
Yeah, it was only down from the hotel.
Yeah.
I think we were there. I arrived to Paulie and Ferg at 9 o'clock, and the owner came out and he gave us a card, and he'd a load of money on it. I think there could have been 4 or 5 grand. He said, "Use that." By 12, he came back and said, "That's gone." he said, "But work away." But the whole team was in at that stage. But what he didn't know was, and hopefully he might be looking at this, but like, I invited all of my friends from Tullow. So it's about 25 lads drinking the whole day with us, free beer, and they thought this was the best thing ever. I was actually speaking to one of them the other day, and he said, he was saying that he's actually going to Japan, but he mightn't have the same crack he had back then. But 2015 then was very different for me, because I was coming back from an injury, and I got suspended then for that quarter-final game for the punch on Pape. But again, Paulie tells this one actually quite good. Just before he went out for that game, I'd given a bit of a spiel in the dressing room, and I was fired up all week, because the Frenchies had come out and said, "We're going to bully these lads, we're going to physically dominate them, we're going to do all this stuff to them." And I was kind of saying, "You're going to do absolutely none of that, and we're going to do that to you," in my head. So I kind of got revved up in the change room, and then we're in the tunnel on the way out, and I turned around, I think it was fourth or fifth out, and I said, "Nothing stupid early on, lads." And then 90 seconds later, I had a fella punched in the stomach myself. And I missed in the quarterfinal against Argentina. And I remember that was definitely one of the worst times of my life. That
missing that game.
That sighting, and going into that game after the Argentina game, I remember my two nephews, who were very young at the time, they were 5 and 6 maybe, and my sister and all my family were in the room, and I broke down on the way to the table, and I literally sat there for 2 hours weeping. I just couldn't contain myself at all. I'd obviously let them down, but we were missing Paulie, Johnny, there was a few lads missing that day obviously, and one of us on the field, I think we would have beaten the Argies. You know what I mean? Yeah. And everyone talks about this quarter-final thing, and we were just missing 5 of our really good players that day, and it was one of my biggest regrets and a terrible time. And that's why I really was pushing hard to get to this one. I wanted to kind of make up for what I'd done in the last one.
How does that compare, Shoney, then? Oh. I think rugby players in general have a lot of ups and downs. That was obviously a disappointing time for you, and you've obviously struggled with injuries, you know, throughout your career at kind of crucial moments.
Yeah.
How does a moment like that compare to, like, you know, the hip injury at the start of the summer?
Yeah, they're very different, I suppose, because with the hip injury, it's with injuries like this, you know you're out, you're done. You've missed the World Cup. You're on a 6 or 7 month rehab program.
Whereas, you know straight away, did you?
With the hip?
Yeah.
It was after, actually, it was after the Lions Tour in 2017. That November, we played South Africa in Dublin. And I was flying fit at the time and playing really well, and I was really happy with my form. And I remember walking down the corridor in Carton House on that Sunday evening. I just got a pain right at the front of my hip. And that was it. That was literally, I was walking, and I got a pain, and I had that then until I had the operation last year. Mm. And sleep, and there's so much to cause with injuries, but yeah, I was probably playing on one leg, or trying to play on one leg. And when I met the hip surgeon that Christmas in 2017, he talked me through the steps of where we could go with this, and basically I needed a new hip, a full replacement if I wasn't going to keep playing. And if I was going to keep playing, well, we had a few options to see could I play. And but once I had this done, going back to your question, is that it's done, it's dusted, you know you're not playing, you know you've rehab ahead of you, and you just set yourself small goals every day and every week and get small little wins along the way. But comparing to the World Cup, where you are fit but you're sitting in the stands because you just haven't been disciplined, and you know, there's no comparison then, because you know yourself, you have to let everyone down.
What way did Joe react to the Pascal Papi bit? Was it a pat in the back, a hard luck, or was there a telling off?
There was a bit of a telling off, yeah. He just said, look, he said, you can't do that, you can't get away with that now. And it was probably just a moment of madness for me. And one of the funny things about that situation was that...
Obviously a lot of regret there.
No, there is. A lot of regret, but he, like... In sitting in the here and listening to a player like that, an international player, tell lies to the citing commissioner straight up, is it baffled me. Like, he was there saying that he'd broken his ribs.
Lie. You'd never tell lies.
In that situation, I'd always look. You have respect on Osfield, but he said to them that he was in hospital for a night. His rib was broke. All this stuff, and then the doctor's report came back, and none of this had happened. So, like, I was like, your ribs will be broke, all right, if I get my hands on it. If I got a hold of Matt's Argentina game, he was in trouble. But, no, it's complete. But Joe, the funny thing happened in that game, after the punch, and the referee had stopped and everything, Nigel Owens, I was kind of keeping one eye on him like this, like, going, did he see me, or did anyone hear it? There wasn't a word being said, and I was happy. But Paulie came to me and said, did you just punch him? Because he kind of seen it out of the corner of his eye. He said, did you just punch him in the stomach? And I said, no. I said, open hand. I walked off. And he still brings
there's nothing more
out.
Terrifying so than
I did lie to Paulie at the time. But I admitted it afterwards. But it's complete different circumstances, though. And when something like that happens, you truly are regretful and disappointed with yourself. Yeah.
At least you didn't volley him. Do you remember, Flannery, you volleyed someone?
Let's keep the focus on Sean here. Let's keep the focus on Sean.
That's what were you correct. Doing then, actually? I remember that. What was your thought process there? Talk me through it.
There is no real thought process, man. It was more like, I felt like I was out playing for Fairview and against Pike, and the ball bounced, and I just thought, I think I've got maybe a 20% chance of getting this one.
He's fair game, is what he thought.
Yeah, well...
Man and ball.
The game has moved on now, obviously. And I understand. What really interests me is, I think, is like one of the reasons that, like, you're so popular here amongst the Munster supporters is it's unusual for a Leinster guy, but it's because you're so transparent, because you're so honest. And I'm not saying all the other Leinster lads are dishonest. Maybe I am. But what I mean is that, like, particularly on the last Lions tour when you went out there, everyone, like, people have an affinity with you because you're a straight shooter and you tell it as it is, and sometimes it's a little bit too much information, but you're always very honest. But when you came back from the last tour and you were incredible on the tour, you performed so well, but you were quite critical then in hindsight, when it would have been so easy to be media savvy and say nothing about it and just say we did okay, but you came out and you were quite outspoken about that. Like, what was it exactly that you felt that you were lacking on the tour?
I just thought, with the group of players we have or had on that tour, and And the management, I suppose, as well. Like, I know it's a tough job, obviously, getting that all together and stuff, but to have enough time to plan out everything perfectly, you know, over that period of time, it should run like clockwork. And I just think it was a big, massive opportunity missed. And that's why I said what I said at the end, because, you know, in this day and age, should we be overtrained the first week leading into a test game?
No.
Yeah, and like, should players be, like, players obviously drive everything as well, but you know, I just thought there was a bit too much messing and yappy things going on in the background. And yeah, maybe me being a bit honest is going a bit far sometimes, but that's just my mindset, I suppose. But like, I came back from that hearing in Wellington for the Lions tour as well. I was at another disciplinary meeting. Didn't get banned, by the way. Innocent. But it was ridiculous as well what I was brought in for that time, because they said I forearmed someone in the head, and yeah, I don't do that because I end up breaking my arm. But I was in the disciplinary meeting, followed lads on a day later, and when I got to the hotel, there was still lads having beers and stuff. This is 2 years after the second test, and we were leading into the final week, and I was just like, what do I do here? Do I join them, or do I, you know, go and get ready for a test match this week? And I went on to bed. I was drained, and I was worried, or kind of all that thing was still up in the air, whether I would get banned or not. And then we were playing catch up the rest of the week, and I just thought that was an opportunity missed. And like, maybe it's up to the leaders within the group as well to really put the foot down and you know what I mean, say, are we doing too much, are we doing too little, and so on. And you know, we end up drawing the last test.
I think the part, like, it was a draw.
Just fair, like, enough. Wouldn't it be unbelievable to come home and say we're after beating New Zealand in their own backyard?
I agree with you. The thing that stood out to me is that you really had nothing to gain by calling people out on that, because it's not like if it happened during a Leinster season and you said it at the end of the season, said, listen, this wasn't good enough, and then you affect change in it, and then it runs on from there. Well, then Leinster are better and you benefit. But you had nothing really to benefit, only for the Lions to just point out something that our preparation wasn't good enough. That's why I found it unusual.
Yeah,
and you're a gobby bastard as well when you want.
No, I'm not. But the way it came across is probably a bit. It was probably a bit aggressive, but I didn't mean it for it to come like that. I meant it to come as a point, basically, to improve things going forward and kind of learn from our mistakes. Because, you know, if the lads go to, if I go to South Africa the next time, etc.
Now, Rob Howley's coach, you won't be going.
He won't be, who?
Rob Howley.
I don't know if he'll be going now.
Put your money on it anyway.
But like, there's obviously lessons to be learned out of every tour, but like, I do realise how big and normative a thing it is to get perfectly right, obviously.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was an opportunity missed.
It's interesting to hear, like, when you, so lads, they're on tour, you're in New Zealand, and it's still lads wanting to have crack and enjoy themselves, you know, for a couple of days after a big win, despite having a big game the following weekend. I mean, yeah. This obviously, with Ireland's current situation, been over in the World Cup in Japan for a month and building up to our biggest game that we've ever had, potentially, there's going to be none of that going on. I mean, they're going to be
absolutely
ultra focused, no, right?
Absolutely not. But the Lions tour is so unique. That's all a part of it too. It's steeped in history, like. And you know, that's what makes Lions tours, is the crack and everyone getting really close together, and some people getting too close together and painting toenails and stuff. So
getting James the names, name some names.
Haskell, like, he was nightmare. Yeah. I actually asked to not be roomed with him after the second week because I couldn't handle him anymore.
Oh, I thought you were proper, like.
No, we were at the end, like. In fairness, I took him back in. And I said, look, you need to calm down a little bit. Stop being so up and down all the time.
Yeah.
He had a kind of a steady pace for me.
Yeah.
Well, he was gas crack actually, so he was. Good lad.
Yeah. So looking at Ireland heading into the weekend against New Zealand, being one of the only people in the room that have been there and beaten them, how do you think they're looking? Is it, you know, there's a lot of worry out there that it's it's the same thing we're seeing again and again? Do you feel like they've got something up their sleeve? Or
yeah, I definitely think there are a few things up their sleeve. Knowing Joe, they definitely do. And I think while I suppose everyone, including myself, has looked the last few weeks and seen little glimpses of nice play, etc., there is a big performance in these lads. And the one thing I'll go back to is that they've done a lot of firsts in the last few years. You know, going away, beating New Zealand, obviously, winning Southern Hemisphere Tour, etc. And I just think something is telling me that's going to happen this weekend. And I think there's a massive performance in the boys. You can look at the Pool games and you can say what you want about them, but they're done with now. Forget about it. This is knockout rugby. And the one thing I did say I did like about Ireland last week was their energy was good the whole way through the game. Where the previous two, they looked flat and a bit tired, etc. And players looked tired. And last weekend, that's what I kind of said to myself after the game. They're on the money now. They'll be ready to rock next week, hopefully, regardless of who they have. And I hope that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You look at Johnny, Pete, all these boys. These lads aren't going over there to, you know what I mean, to get knocked out in the quarterfinal. They're going over to win a World Cup.
Mm.
And so it'll take a good team to beat them.
Back to believe?
Yeah. I'm convinced.
He's convincing, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop supporting Japan from now on.
Is there anything in particular that you think they can do to upset that New Zealand team? As Briggsy said earlier on, there's something about the Irish at the moment that feel like we've got something up on New Zealand. But is there anything particular in your experience that we can draw upon?
I just think I think Joel have spotted something, some kink in their armour. And if we get it right, if we execute right, you know, you've seen it in the last few games that we've beaten, and we should have beat them. I was probably at fault the time in the Viva after the Chicago game, because I'll take Dev into this as well. His delivery wasn't perfect, but I probably should have still held it on a peeler on the back of the line out 5 metres out, and we scored that and we probably win the game. But there's little tricks like that we've done in the past a few games against them that have worked beautifully when they're done right, and they are scoring opportunities. So I think you'll see something like that this weekend. And I think our scrum is going to be massive. Any time we've beaten them, we've actually got a few scrum penalties off scrum, and it's not talked about that often. We have won a few against them, and they're predominantly known as a really good scrummaging team. So they're kind of the two things. I think we'll see something that we haven't seen before, a few trick plays, and set piece is going to be massive, especially the scrum.
I'm convinced.
Are you showing the match in here?
Yeah.
In this room?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I've a special announcement to make, actually. It is Gerry Flannery's birthday today. He's not as young as he looks, lads. He's
there for everyone to
be honest. There we go.
That's fuck you.
And we're going to take the opportunity to give him a little cake. Is that all right? Gerry Senior is down here, I believe. He's here, Gerry Senior. So I'd say about 15 years ago, Gerry Junior turned to his dad and said, "Daddy, I want a bar. I want it now." And Gerry Senior, having worked and built this place.
These are my jokes that I use on me, that you're using on me now in front of the public.
Foolish. Built this place from the ground up, as you see, handed it over.
He did fuck all with this, man. I did all this.
He's done an unbelievable job, Ger. So fair play to you. This is your empire. It's not his. It's your empire. So Gerry bought you the most measly cake in the world, Flav, right? So we're going to present it to you now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yes.
Oh, there it is. Sorry.
Happy birthday to you.
pure luxury.
Happy birthday to you.
€2 and
happy birthday to
Spineless.
Your word.
Happy birthday.
Not exactly a cake, more of a gâteau, but I appreciate it.
Larnell now would eat 10 of those.
You got it.
Jesus.
Remind him,
we could have splashed
Remind
out,
him.
Lads. We saved on the late fire with Briggsy. We could have splashed out. Thank you, Liz. Cheers for the cake. Lads, we had a good night. I think we'll wrap it up with a firm belief that Ireland are going to win on Saturday and we're going to win the World Cup. Yes. Fair enough. Sean, you've convinced us all. So, where's Japan? Japan is over there, is it? Where's East? Where's East, lads? I fucking knew I shouldn't ask the Limerick crowd this. Where's East? Over there. Point your points East. Believe. That's where it's disaster. Point it up. Thanks to Niamh, to Scans, and to Shawnee. Thanks to everyone in production that has made tonight possible. Thanks to all the bar staff here and everyone in Flannery's. Thank you. Thanks to all our penguins for coming out tonight. We love you all very much. Thanks to Liam. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
Cheers, Sean.
Cheers, Baz.
Cheers, Bob. Cheers, Johnny.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.